You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's like marijuana ought to be legalized. Good people smoke marijuana.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, March 23rd, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. It's episode number 912, and coming up on today's show, in the news, the DEA approves a new oral THC supplement proposed by an Arizona company that helped defeat marijuana legalization last year. In our cannabis focus, Judge Neil Gorsuch thinks anti-gay corporations have more religious rights than marijuana worshippers. In drug war data mining, the cannabis industry is bullish despite Jeff Sessions' reefer madness. Our guest today is hemp expert Andrea Herman, recorded last summer in Vancouver, British Columbia. And in the Radical Rant, I explain how medical cannabis and industrial hemp advocates unknowingly harm legalization efforts. Then in hour two, Oregon Senate wants to raise the cigarette age to 21 and debate heats up over legalization in Connecticut. But first, let's get to the news.
Covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Now your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is Cannabis News.
This is your cannabis headline news for Thursday, March 23rd, 2017. According to the MarijuanaMoment.net newsletter, the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration placed a new THC oral solution in Schedule 2. In its analysis, it seemed to admit that the new drug has a similar abuse potential to Schedule 1 marijuana itself, noting that, quote, "This liquid formulation can be manipulated to produce concentrated extracts of dronabinol for abuse by inhalation, smoking, or vaping," end quote. While the key difference between Schedule 1 and Schedule 2 drugs is medical value, not abuse potential, it's still significant for DEA to acknowledge that marijuana products in legalization states are generally just as safe as the prescription cannabis drugs they're federally approving. Insys, the company whose THC drug DEA just approved, donated $500,000 to oppose legal marijuana in Arizona last year. Rhode Island Senate President, who has long been skeptical of the push to legalize marijuana, is out, and the new incoming top official in the chamber is a leading co-sponsor of a bill to end cannabis prohibition. Tom Angel at Massroots reports that current Senate President Teresa Priva Weed, a Democrat, is reportedly stepping down to take a job at the Rhode Island Hospital Association. Current Majority Leader Dominic Ruggiero is set to take her place, and replacing him as the Senate's number two is Judiciary Committee Chairman Michael McCaffrey. Ruggiero and McCaffrey are, respectively, the second and third co-sponsors listed on pending marijuana legalization bill S-420. After his colleagues voted him in as majority leader late last year, Ruggiero's acceptance speech, quote, referenced the marijuana legalization vote in Massachusetts and suggested that marijuana will now be a key issue in the coming General Assembly session, end quote, according to the Providence Journal. Piva Weed, on the other hand, said in January that she has, quote, significant concerns, end quote, about legalization. In another interview, she said she is worried about, quote, the safety of the citizens and the safety of the children, end quote. The Vermont House Judiciary Committee has approved a bill that would legalize the possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana or a handful of homegrown marijuana plants. The bill would allow adults over 21 years old to have up to 1 ounce of marijuana or up to 5 grams of hashish, as well as up to 2 marijuana plants that are mature and 4 immature marijuana plants per household. The House Judiciary Committee advanced the marijuana legalization bill Wednesday afternoon by a vote of 8-3. The bill moves next to the full House, where a vote is possible Friday. The bill envisions a system similar to the one in Washington, D.C., instead of the tax and regulated marijuana market that was contemplated in last year's Vermont legalization bill. The Philippines tourism secretary urged the media Wednesday to, quote, tone down, end quote, coverage of President Rodrigo Duterte's deadly drug war, complaining that reports on extrajudicial killings were scaring away foreigners. On a trip to Thailand accompanying Duterte, tourism secretary Wanda Teo insisted that Philippines was a safe destination, but said journalists were making the country a hard sell because of their focus on the killings. Tao said tour operators abroad were always asking her about the issue, citing Asia and Europe as regions where people were particularly concerned. Since he took office nearly 9 months ago, police have reported killing 2,594 people in the drug war, while rights groups say thousands more have been killed in a state-sanctioned campaign of mass murder. Federal officials ruled Thursday that a Colorado woman's proposed trademark on Marijuanaville could too easily be confused with Jimmy Buffett's trademark on Margaritaville. The singer-songwriter uses the title of his 1977 hit for restaurants, bars, and merchandise. Rachel Beavis applied to register Marijuanaville back in 2014 so she could exclusively use the brand on hats, t-shirts, sweatpants, and other apparel. Buffett's company, Margaritaville Enterprises, opposed the application to the Trademark Trial and Appeal Board. The Trademark Trial and Appeal Board essentially agreed with Buffett that Margaritaville was a long-running and established brand with impressive sales numbers behind it. The board wasn't as impressed with Beavis's argument that Marijuanaville was completely different and that she would only market and sell in states that support the marijuana industry. And according to a new survey in Vermont, 54% of Vermont residents favor taxing and regulating marijuana like alcohol, but that increases to 57% for a non-commercial alternative. This has been your Cannabis Headline News. I'm Russ Belville.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, The Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Yo, man, why you holding on me, dude?
Because I can't.
Yo, look, check it out. We about to go get twisted. Y'all coming or what?
Nah, man, I gotta hit the books, man.
All right, well.
All right.
Make it happen.
All right, man.
See you guys.
Can I get a check?
Nah. We straight.
Thanks, man.
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day, exclusively on RadicalRuss.com.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
I think that as far as drug legalization, we talk about marijuana, and in terms of medical, I think I am basically for that.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Bueller.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. The world of cannabis is evolving at a frenetic pace. The Russ Belville Show gets behind the headlines to take a deeper look at breaking news in our Cannabis Focus.
Today in the Cannabis Focus, we take a look at the current confirmation hearings for Judge Neil Gorsuch. He's appearing before the Senate Judiciary Committee, where he is being questioned on all of the cases he's ruled on in the past and what he might rule in the future, particularly with regard to such hot-button issues as gay rights and abortion. And in the discussion of gay rights, there is a case that's called the Hobby Lobby case, and this has to do with a company called Hobby Lobby, whose owners, the Greens is their last name, the Greens are sincere Christians who disapprove of homosexuality and disapprove of contraception and abortion and typical right-wing conservative Christian issues. And they refused to provide contraceptive coverage to their employees. And in doing so, they ran afoul of the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare, and its mandates to provide such coverage. And in a shocking decision, the U.S. Supreme Court decided that Hobby Lobby, as a private for-profit corporation, had the religious right under the First Amendment and the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, or RFRA, to be able to not provide contraceptive coverage because they had a religious objection to it. That's the background that gets us to this discussion between Senator Chris Coons, the Democrat from Delaware, who's questioning Judge Neil Gorsuch on his opinions about the Hobby Lobby case. And in refuting the or replying to the senator, Judge Gorsuch brings up a case of people who sincerely had a religious belief that marijuana is a sacrament. We go now to the Supreme Court via C-SPAN. This is Senator Chris Coons interviewing Judge Neil Gorsuch.
Hobby Lobby striking to so many was that the choices of 13,000 individuals about their method of family planning were overridden by the sincerely held religious beliefs of a very successful family. So I'm looking for how you find a limiting principle in this new field. What's the limiting principle now?
Senator, respectfully, I don't believe that's accurate either, because all the court held was that the government had to come up with another alternative to provide the contraceptive care it wished to provide. The Supreme Court acknowledged that there was a compelling interest in providing the contraceptive care and simply said that an accommodation could be reached that didn't involve the Greens or require them to give up their sincerely held religious belief, much as had been done for churches and hospitals and lots of other entities. And the government couldn't explain why it couldn't accommodate other entities like Hobby Lobby well, or Little Sisters of the Poor.
But if I might just briefly, Judge, strikingly to me, in the Tenth Circuit opinion in which you participated, you didn't recognize as a compelling interest gender equity in providing health insurance to millions. The Supreme Court did. They balanced these equities differently. Why didn't you think that that was a compelling interest to provide access to health care for millions?
Senator, I think it was just a matter of what had been what the record was in that particular case before us.
That's also a striking point for me. This was a preliminary injunction. It's a significant, groundbreaking opinion where one of your colleagues, one of the other Tenth Circuit judges, said we really shouldn't be deciding something of this import on a PI. We ought to be remanding to develop the facts below. The facts weren't really well explored. And the larger point I'm trying to make is that I think this could lead to some very troubling applications. So let's just take a minute and look at a few of the contours of what this, I think, precedent-setting decision might mean. So let's imagine the Greens were from a different religious perspective. If they were Scientologists, for example, who reject the use of antidepressants, or Jehovah's Witnesses who reject the use of blood transfusions, or Christian Scientists who reject really modern medicine largely altogether, could their sincerely held religious beliefs as Scientologists or Jehovah's Witnesses or Christian Scientists lead to the conclusion that 13,000 employees could reasonably be denied access to antidepressants or to blood transfusions or to health care whatsoever?
No, Senator, not necessarily. It doesn't mean that at all. All it means is that the government, under the law as passed by this Congress, with overwhelming bipartisan support at the time,
well, the ACA was not passed with overwhelming bipartisan support.
I'm sorry, I'm speaking of RFRA.
Right. The accommodation is in the ACA.
Oh, and the ACA, you can override RFRA anytime you want. Congress could say RFRA doesn't apply to the ACA. That's another alternative. So you can abandon RFRA. You can say it doesn't apply to this particular statute. You can say it applies only to natural persons. You can say it doesn't apply to contraceptive care. Congress controls this decision, Senator.
That's right.
It's your decision. It's not mine, with all respect. We're just trying to implement what you've asked us to do.
So,
and Senator, on your hypotheticals,
yes.
Okay. Justice Brennan wrote these First Amendment cases that you were seeking to revive. I'd remind you of that.
Yeah.
All right? Justice Brennan. All right? And the fact of the matter is, sometimes the government can prove a compelling interest, and then it's got the most narrowly tailored way to get there. And sometimes it can't. And each case has to be taken on its facts in the particular context in which it arises.
Well, then help me walk through, if you would, given we already know how you draw the compelling interest line in this particular instance of access to family planning or contraception, how else might you weigh these equities or draw these lines? If the Greens, for example, in Hobby Lobby, knew that several of their employees would spend their paychecks on other things they might say were immoral, like gambling or prostitution, could they refuse to endorse their paychecks?
Senator, it would go back to, we do the analysis,
right?
The same analysis. Do they have a sincerely held religious belief? Sometimes people don't. I've had claims, for example, of individuals.
But in this instance, wouldn't you agree that their sense of the complicity that you referenced in your opinion would likely apply?
It depends.
Even though it's very attenuated.
Oh, no,
the choice of their employee to spend their money in a way they disapprove isn't that different from the choice of the employee to choose among 24 forms of contraception, one of which they strongly disapprove.
Senator, I think it depends on the facts of the case. So, for example, I've had a case where a number of people came before us and said, we have a sincerely held religious belief that marijuana is God.
Okay.
It turned out it was a drug distribution ring.
Right.
All right. And what they really worshipped was the Almighty Dollar.
Many of us have teenagers at home watching.
Right. Well, right. And they're really just trying to make a buck. Okay. And the district court found that that wasn't a sincerely held religious belief. So that you can get off the train there. That's one place where you may get off the train in your hypothetical. You got another place you can get off the train. Is it a substantial burden?
Right.
Another place is compelling interest by the government. Another place is narrowly tailoring. So there are four steps in the process. And you have to go through all four of them as a good judge with the facts of each case as it comes. And, Senator, again, it's all statutory. You could abolish it tomorrow.
That's Judge Neil Gorsuch appearing at the confirmation hearings for the Supreme Court seat that was denied to Merrick Garland because President Obama and the Democrats didn't raise enough hell about that. I'll rant about that some other time. But a couple of notes from that discussion that I think are important. First of all, in the case that Judge Gorsuch is referring to, is a case out of Arizona, the Quaintance case, I believe, they did not believe that marijuana is God. They believe there is a God, and his sacrament is marijuana. I think that's an important distinction, and it bothers me that someone applying to be a Supreme Court justice could so carelessly describe the case by saying we had some people believe marijuana is God. That is going to elicit more of a chuckle, and congratulations to Senator Coons for holding a little bit of a poker face when he said that. But it's the kind of thing that's going to elicit a chuckle as compared to think cannabis is a spiritual sacrament, for example. And on the other side, Chris Coons, Senator Coons, making the offhand remark to Judge Gorsuch, a lot of us have teenagers that are watching these hearings, once again speaks to how difficult it is for some adults to be able to understand that marijuana is an issue. It's just a legitimate issue. There's 8 states that have legalized, 28 with medical. Why shouldn't teenagers be hearing discussion about this issue? This idea that if they hear the word marijuana or they see adults talking about it, it's somehow going to lead them into the arms of Mary Jane inexorably is just ridiculous. In fact, what you tend to find is the more exposure kids get to marijuana and adults talking about it as a serious issue, the more turned off they are to it. It becomes boring politics, mom and dad stuff. I am very lucky to count among my friends some of the pioneers in marijuana law reform. People like Keith Straub, Rick Cusick, Lester Grinspoon, and so forth. Guys in their 60s, 70s, and 80s whose kids are long since grown and having kids of their own. And almost always I find that their kids don't have anything to do with marijuana at all. They don't want to have anything to do with it. It's nothing they are concerned about. That's dad's thing. It's really no big deal to them. Legalization of marijuana and talking honestly about cannabis science and the history and the culture around it are not going to lead any more kids to using marijuana than are already using marijuana. And as far as the Hobby Lobby case and this idea that corporations, private for-profit corporations, we're not talking religious institutions, we're not talking nonprofit charities like the Catholic Boys Club or whatever, we're talking about a private for-profit corporation given the rights under the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. And as Judge Gorsuch puts it, Congress could stop that by declaring that corporations are not people, or at least in this case, corporations don't get the same rights as people. I'm afraid, though, we get Gorsuch on this court, and it'll be a long time before we get that decision happening. Very long. Well, that sound means that it's 20 after the hour. I thought it would be more of a whistle, but I guess that old file is still living down there somewhere in the bowels of the Liebermator. We got to take a break. Happy 420 to the folks in the Mountain Time Zone. We'll be right back with some drug war data mining. The cannabis industry is bullish, despite Jeff Sessions. Get your tickets now for the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference, happening one day only in Eugene, Oregon on Friday, April 28th. You'll learn all about the latest OLCC regulations for adult use cannabis, including testing requirements, tech and branding, taxes and distribution, and the latest developments in medical marijuana regulations. OMBC features networking with Oregon's leading experts in marijuana, including State Senator Floyd Prezansky. You'll also get to hear from author, actor, and punk rock icon Henry Rollins delivering the keynote address. Early bird pricing is available for conference only and VIP passes, which gets you access to the VIP networking events featuring Henry Rollins and other speakers. It's the 2017 Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. Tickets available now at OregonMBC.com. That's OregonMBC.com before April 14th to get your early bird pricing. OregonMBC.com.
The Russ Belville Show, where the truth about marijuana gets more than a minute to speak.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. And I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Promoting the end of adult cannabis prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It's even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more on this edition of Drug War Data Mining.
There's a piece in the Cannabis Today entitled, "With 34% growth in 2016, cannabis industry bullish despite Sessions' comments." Of course, referring to Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who is absolutely opposed to marijuana legalization in all its forms. But despite that, people with their pulse, their finger on the pulse of the investment side of the industry are still bullish on the prospects, particularly Troy Dayton, the CEO of ArcView Market Research. And according to ArcView's figures, legalized pot in North America will continue to grow at a compound annual rate of 27% through 2021. And Troy Dayton says that that momentum will not be stopped by the Trump administration. They say a crackdown is unlikely because of the popularity of the movement and the funds it would take to renew the war on drugs. Dayton says, quote, "It's just so politically unpopular, it would be silly," end quote. Well, I would hasten to counsel people to be a little careful when it comes to this, and Troy Dayton as well, if you're listening, because as far as it being so politically unpopular, it would be silly. You know what else would be incredibly politically unpopular? Mocking a disabled reporter. Getting into a fight with a Gold Star family. Repealing the health care for 24 million Americans. I don't have the feeling that this administration is too concerned about doing things that are not politically popular. I think this administration's idea is to make as much money as it can in the next 4 years as humanly possible. And this idea that it would take a lot of money to renew the war on drugs, we already see this Department of Justice beginning to, or at least the Heritage Foundation, suggesting to the Department of Justice numerous ways they could throw a monkey wrench into the exploding development of the cannabis industry that would only take letters. It'd only take a piece of paper and a stamp to start causing some serious problems. And that's not going to take a whole lot of money to get rolling. So I would caution people to be wary of this and to understand that there is a certain, there's a certain drive, I would say, a certain perspective by people that have big money involved in the continued growth of the cannabis industry to see it with a little bit of rose-colored glasses. Maybe looking at this more as business and not so much as the culture war that it is. And there's nobody who's a more diehard culture warrior on this issue than Jeff Sessions. Yes, it would be politically unpopular. The latest Quinnipiac poll said that 71% of voters think that the federal government shouldn't enforce federal laws against marijuana in states with recreational or legal use. And of course, the feds can't go after the medical use. Recreational or medical use, I should have said. They can't go after the medical use because of the appropriations rider, the Rohrabacher Amendment, that prevents DOJ from spending any money against the states that have legalized medical marijuana. This does not stop them from going after legal marijuana. There is a McClintock-Polis Amendment that is being proposed that would be just like the Rohrabacher Amendment, except this one would apply to states that have legalized adult use of marijuana and forbid the Department of Justice from spending any taxpayer funds to prosecute that. And Representative Polis and Representative McClintock are pretty bullish on the idea that it's going to get enough votes, that they'll have enough support for this. And indeed, if Congress can tie the hands of the Department of Justice, we'll be in better shape. But even then, keep in mind that both of those amendments refer to the operations in the states so long as they are complying with state law. And there's a question as to whether that means, does the state determine whether they're complying with state law, or does the federal government determine whether they're complying with state law? This is a question that's being asked right now in a case in Montana involving a medical marijuana caregiver who's on trial who believes he can't be prosecuted because of that Rohrabacher Amendment. And then the feds are countering that, no, he wasn't in compliance with state law. Now we need to know whether or not the feds' opinion on compliance with state law matters or not. And yes, the marijuana industry is generating a whole lot of money, $6.7 billion on legalized marijuana in 2016. That is the 34% growth from the previous year they were discussing. But again, remember that one pharmaceutical company, Pfizer, just one company, made over $7 billion in profits. Just profits, not gross sales, just profits. Keep in mind, one alcohol company, one macro brewer, Anheuser-Busch InBev, made $8 billion in profits last year. Just one brewer made $8 billion in profits, not gross sales. The NFL is bigger than the legalized marijuana industry at $8 to $10 billion in profits. So let's try to get some perspective on just how big our industry is and how much it's growing. The projections here to be up in the $20 or $30 billion range of sales by the time we get to 2020 or 2021 are encouraging, but they're still just a drop in the bucket compared to some of our opponents and how much money they've got behind them. Pharmaceutical companies, alcohol companies, healthcare companies, private prison industries, law enforcement, rehabs. I sure hope that Troy Dayton is right, that it would be ridiculous and impossible and nothing bad's going to happen and everything is going to keep going just like it's been going and the federal government's not going to do a damn thing about it. I hope that's the way it goes. I hope I'm wrong. I really do. All right, folks, stay tuned. We're going to take a break. And when we come back, we take a look at the wide world of weed with a pre-recorded interview from Summer with Andrea Herman, industrial hemp expert. Right after these.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs, and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics, Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of The Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
You're listening to Radical Russ on The Russ Belville Show. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
A public service message from The Russ Belville Show.
The global prohibition of cannabis is a crime against the planet committed primarily by the United States. But as more U.S. states reform their marijuana laws, countries around the world are stepping back from cannabis prohibition. Join us now for a look at the international cannabis reform movement in this edition of The Wide World of Weed.
Last summer, I got the chance to visit Vancouver, British Columbia, and conduct this interview with Andrea Herman.
Of course, the nation of Canada has had legal hemp cultivation for years, while the farmers south of the border in America have been denied that right. But hemp has also been cultivated in many other countries around the world, and there's nobody who's a bigger expert on the international affairs, on the international status of industrial hemp, than our next guest, Andrea Herman. She's with numerous hemp groups, and she'll give you the names of those groups in the interview. But she makes a good point of covering the Far East in this interview. We talked a little bit about South Korea and Japan and their burgeoning hemp industries and what it's going to take to get the ball rolling here in the United States of America, including what the newest applications of industrial hemp may be, including a question on hemp battery technology. This is Andrea Herman this weekend from Vancouver, BC. Welcome back, everyone. Radical Russ here in Vancouver, British Columbia at the Cannabis Hemp Expo, and I've run into international hemp expert Andrea Herman. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing real good. It's nice to be back in Canada and looking forward to getting home to Manitoba.
No doubt about that. You were just recently in the Korea area. Tell us about your trip to the Far East.
Yeah, so I had the opportunity to go to Korea, South Korea, and then over to Japan for the Kyoto Hemp International Forum, which was phenomenal. It was a great event, and it's really interesting to see now the growing market for hemp foods, not only in Korea, but the demand that's growing overall, like in Japan in addition.
So at this international event, most of the countries participating have some sort of legal hemp industry, right?
You know, a lot of the panelists came in from around the world, so included Ben Dronkers, myself, we had a woman from Thailand, Olive, Paul Benheim was there, Paul Stanford was there, so they really brought together, but a lot of the people that attended in Japan, they were from Japan, they're very interested in changing the regulations, because right now it's really geared towards cultivation underneath very strict regulations, or for the imperial family only.
Oh.
And I found it really interesting that our translators, when we went to talk with the translators before we presented, she didn't even know what hemp was.
Wow.
So you're talking about a culture that's so ingrained in hemp history, and people don't even know what it is. So there's a huge education piece there, and it's now really starting. It's very grassroots. And amazing to see the First Lady of Japan come to the event with the high priest and the mayor of Kyoto standing out and fighting for the rights of cannabis and saying, this is right, we should have access, and change does need to be made, and she came there. So that's really good message to drive home.
This is kind of off on a tangent, but you mentioned Japan. I think Fukushima. Is hemp being involved in any phytoremediation there?
People are investigating and seeing what can they do and how can they. If hemp is the right crop for that, how do they dispose of it afterwards? So definitely a hot topic, and know something that, you know, is going to move forward there. It's investigating what crops, not only hemp, are going to be part of that solution.
You also mentioned the demand for hemp foods. Is that the big driver in those markets, and is it different from continent to continent?
Well, as we've seen in all the news reports coming out, especially about South Korea, is it's the home shopping network. So you have a massive, huge buying power of people that are women, mostly, that are staying home and they're shopping, but however you can get it in. So if you're talking maybe 20% of the population is buying off of the home shopping network, and they're buying a lot of hauled hemp right now. A lot of hauled hemp is going over there. So if they're buying it and they can get 20 more of the retail shelf market, that's really going to put put them on the mark of really being the largest consumer of hauled hemp foods right now, around the globe.
One of the amazing developments that I followed just by covering the news was this research on using hemp in batteries as a replacement for graphene. Are there any updates on that technology that you can tell us about?
Well, I tell you, that stuff's changing every single day. Part of it is, looking at the fiber quality, the readying process, and the processing. So the research is coming out saying, yes, it's absolutely possible. Now we need to get all the back-end infrastructure in place to actually help drive that. And then also looking at, the crap paperwork that's going on. Very, very interesting on the construction side. I mean, you sort of name it, people are dreaming it and they're doing it.
Well, when I think of hemp, I think of you, and you probably know everything there is to know, but like you say, it's changing so fast. What in the past year or so has come to your surprise in the world of hemp? Like, just shocked you?
Oh, wow. Riding like on the hemp composite bike, things that are really practical to people. I think that makes sense. All the regulatory change and the inventiveness that's gone on in changing what the agronomic and agricultural landscape looks like for industrial hemp production. Because we used to say you will never be able to plant your marijuana looking like plant in my hemp field. Today, we know industrial hemp is being grown for flowers only. It's an entire shift in the agricultural landscape of what it means to be a hemp cultivator or a hemp farmer.
Reference to those CBD-derived type of things?
Oh, yeah, or maybe people that are going for terpenes also. I mean, it's not just about CBDs anymore either, right? I mean, of course, that's a major driver right now, but absolutely. So you look at that type of production, and you look at what the classic fiber and grain seed production. It's very different. The labor needs are different. So these are things as we start to look at what goes into that market. Well, what do we need to help support that and in that infrastructure? Do we have the people to work those fields that need to be worked in a different kind of way versus just seed it and walk away in 110 days you come back with your combine and harvest?
So we're back here in Canada. Canada's got legal hemp cultivation, but what sort of problems does Canada still need to solve?
Well, we need a regulatory review that we've really been fighting for through the Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance for some time now. We're finally getting a really good legway and having the message heard that we need some reform, looking at particularly like total crop utilization. So right now we're not allowed to work with the flowering parts or the leaves. So how do we get that from the hemp industry, especially when we have a fully developed medical cannabis industry here that is able to work with the flowering parts and the leaves and create products that are now being pretty much sold on the retail market and online direct to people. So how do we put a balance in those regulations? How do we start decrimming our farming producers? How do we streamline our paperwork? And then how do we also look at things like derivative testing? Because right now, as a hemp food processor in this country, every batch you have to have a THC test done on it to show your hemp protein powder, your hemp seed oil, your hauled hemp, your toasted hemp is 10 parts per million or less THC. That test costs you $200 and some odd a test. And, when we don't have a checks and balances actually to come back and say, what is all of those results? And we're saying since 1998, we've been growing hemp made into foods from this percentage of THC in the plant. Why should we still be required since 1998 to test for THC in a batch hemp food product? So these are some regulations that cost our industry money. They keep the stigma up about THC as a danger in hemp foods. But now as the hemp food market changes and new processes come on, we have to look at those new processes and say, how do we prove that those processes are safe for people to eat in the eyes of some sort of ready-made food regulation? And that comes into ready-made food regulation. So now we're talking about the food industry. So there's a lot of work to be done. And, really important is getting hemp registered as an animal feed for livestock. We need to be able to feed our chickens omegas that not only come from flax, but omegas that come from hemp. And we need to be able to look at silage and what that means for the dairy cattle industry in this country. And there's research to help support that. So those are some really major initiatives. And, of course, our farmer support, because without our farmers, we are not in the industry anymore. So plant variety trials, agronomy trials. And that's all steered from the Canadian Hemp Trade Alliance and their conferences in November in Saskatoon. So we're really looking forward to like continuing that work here.
Final question, just a quick update on the United States. What's happening with hemp there in various states and federally?
Yeah. Well, of course, we have the Farm Bill. So now we've got research going on in multiple states. Legislation is changing every day. The government is coming more on board about how to support those farmers because they are farming land and needing to apply for grants and applications and those things. So it's a lot coming on. And now we're seeing the DEA really coming on board and helping facilitate that. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens in the regulatory framework federally for industrial hemp, opening up more commercial market and, you know, a cross-border exchange. And how. And now we're seeing, you know, every state is coming on and saying, hey, look, this is something we've got farmers here. So how do we start these variety trials so that our farmers know that cultivars that they're going to be growing are going to do what they intended to do? And also a huge opportunity for infrastructure, fiber processing, and really developing, you know, and finding that missing link, and that missing link brings in opportunity.
So much opportunity coming in the world of hemp. Thank you for keeping on top of it. And before we go, just could you tell folks any contact information or websites they could look up to get some more information?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm Andrea Herman, so you can always just Google me. I'm out there. You can check us out at Hemp Technologies, The Ridge Consulting, and Hemp Production Services. In addition, if you're looking to get involved, definitely go to votehemp.com. Go up to that Take Action tab and take action. You know, talk to your community and really ask your elders about their hemp history, because that's a part of taking that knowledge and passing it on. And that's what we want to see. We want to see the elders coming forward so the next generations understand that this was something that was always with us.
Hemp Heritage, folks, look it up. Andrea Herman, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Russ. Have a great time in Vancouver.
Well, I sure did have a great time in Vancouver. My thanks to Andrea Herman for stopping by to talk with us while we were there on the floor. And we'll be back with more here on the Russ Belville Show. It's time coming up for our radical rant. Only marijuana legalization fulfills the promise of medical cannabis and industrial hemp. I kind of answer one of Andrea's questions. Why do we have to keep testing our industrial hemp batches for THC? Why? Why? Because I like to get high. That's why. I'll explain more about that when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Get your tickets now for the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference, happening one day only in Eugene, Oregon on Friday, April 28th. You'll learn all about the latest OLCC regulations for adult-use cannabis, including testing requirements, tech and branding, taxes and distribution, and the latest developments in medical marijuana regulations. OMBC features networking with Oregon's leading experts in marijuana, including State Senator Floyd Prezansky. You'll also get to hear from author, actor, and punk rock icon Henry Rollins delivering the keynote address. Early bird pricing is available for conference-only and VIP passes, which gets you access to the VIP networking events featuring Henry Rollins and other speakers. It's the 2017 Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. Tickets available now at OregonMBC.com. That's OregonMBC.com before April 14th to get your early bird pricing. OregonMBC.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Drugs are menacing our society. They're threatening our values and undercutting our institutions. They're killing our children.
Okay, maybe you're high too.
Tokers, there's no good reason to get your dog stoned. While it might not harm them physically, imagine being a dog who already begs for treats all day, and then imagine that dog having the munchies. Not cool.
total war against public enemy public number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
Experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think it would be a mistake to leave the state.
Negative reports coming out of
I'm an adult who likes to smoke marijuana for fun. There is nothing shameful about that. But there are some people in America who do think smoking marijuana to get high is somehow an unseemly act. What's worse is that some of them are supposedly on our side. Some of the supporters of medical cannabis, for instance, are fond of saying that they are patients, not criminals, or patients, not potheads. They'll explain how what they're fighting for are sick and disabled people's access to medical cannabis, which they'll assure the listener isn't about some stoners just trying to get high. Those fighting for access to cannabidiol make sure to stress that it's not going to get anybody high. Oh no. God forbid somebody uses marijuana to get high. Healthy people who use marijuana aren't criminals and don't deserve to be slandered as potheads or stoners. But consistently framing medical cannabis as something that's socially acceptable in opposition to smoking marijuana just to get high only reinforces our true opponent's messaging that it's unacceptable. Other medical cannabis supporters try to frame it as health before happy hour. But that still emphasizes that patients have a morally acceptable justification for their marijuana use, and everybody else using marijuana is engaged in a frivolity that it's acceptable to punish. There's a similar arm's length distancing from adult marijuana use espoused by the supporters of industrial hemp. It's rope and soap, not dope, is the slogan heard most often, along with the usual assurance that stoners couldn't get high on hemp if they tried. Again, hemp is promoted as something morally superior, and implications abound that using marijuana is indecorous. It's not as if the individuals supporting medical cannabis or industrial hemp mean to be reinforcing our opponent's messaging. Many of them consume marijuana for non-medical purposes themselves. Most, if not all of them, are with us on the need to end adult marijuana prohibition. They just won't say so publicly, lest they lose mainstream empathy for sick people and curiosity about hemp products through association with the reviled potheads. The irony of it all is that it is the mainstream's revulsion for potheads that hamstrings their efforts to fully utilize medical cannabis and industrial hemp. Why must people in every medical marijuana state but California have some qualifying condition established by law and not medical judgment? Because without specific, objective, verifiable conditions listed, some potheads will access medical marijuana to get high. Why are Western medical marijuana states curtailing the possession and plant limits set for patients prior to adult use legalization? Because with greater limits, some potheads will divert that medical marijuana to other potheads who want to get high. Why are Eastern medical marijuana states prohibiting home cultivation and smoking altogether in favor of non-smoked cannabinoid preparations available only through dispensaries? Because with home cultivation, some potheads will divert medical marijuana to other potheads who want to get high. And because only potheads smoke marijuana, why do southern medical marijuana states ban any form of cannabis oil with more than a scant amount of THC in it? Because if it had THC in it, potheads would use it to get high. Why is hemp cultivation banned to all American farmers except a lucky few involved in some limited state hemp research programs at universities and ag departments? Because if we let farmers grow hemp,
some potheads will find a way to conceal the marijuana they grow to smoke and get high. Why are the few farmers who get to grow industrial hemp limited to cultivars of less than 0.3% THC? Because if the hemp had more THC in it, the potheads would extract it and concentrate it to smoke it and get high. So long as potheads who smoke marijuana to get high must be prevented from doing so at all costs, there will always be a deserving patient who gets stuck on the wrong side of the patient's not criminals line, and industrial hemp will continue to be the minuscule THC cultivars that belie the true potential of the plant's uses. This is not to say there shouldn't be niche cannabis advocacy groups fighting specifically for medical or industrial use. It is to say that there are many ways of framing the debate that don't involve throwing under the bus we stoners who like to get high. After all, we're the only ones fighting to end the prohibition of the cannabis plant for all people and all uses. Winning our fight automatically wins all the others. But fighting only for medical or hemp helps only a minority of us and sets artificial limits and restrictions that will never be exceeded until the bigger war on the majority of us, the potheads and stoners, is over. So there's something new we're trying, a pre-recorded radical rant. I may be uploading these to my SoundCloud page and getting them embedded on my High Times article, the radical rant that I turn in every Tuesday and Friday. So I'm investigating how well I could do that and what the time limits and such would be on such a piece. That one came in at 6 minutes, and that means we still got some extra time. So I'm going to take a quick break here, quick pause, and we'll be right back. We're going to go through some of the full-scale audio from last week, Senator Manchin and Attorney General Sessions, right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Reforming America's marijuana prohibition laws takes education, lobbying, and voting. From Washington, D.C. to your state capitol to your city hall, marijuana law reform involves all levels of civic life. Learn how you can make your impact with elected officials as we take a look at our government at work.
Today in Government at Work, I want to take the opportunity to play the long-form version of a couple of clips that we've been talking about this week. It's been in the show the past few episodes. The first one is coming to you from West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin, who was at a town hall meeting when he was asked about marijuana policy, medical marijuana, marijuana legalization. And I like including this clip because this is a Democrat. And sometimes I think in our movement, there's a tendency for the majority within the movement to think that the Democrats are going to be our best friends on this, or at least the lesser of the two evils on the issue of marijuana legalization. But it's good to remember that many of these Democrats are Democrats in very conservative areas, places like West Virginia, and they're not like you're going to get a Democrat from Hawaii or New York or Minnesota that might have a better understanding of the issue. This is Joe Manchin being questioned about marijuana in a West Virginia town hall meeting. Enjoy.
As far as the marijuana, here's what we said about marijuana. There's people that want recreational marijuana, and the only thing I can tell you is I go to all of these different treatment centers and these clinics and addiction centers where people have been addicted. They, usually 9 out of 10 of them will tell me, I always ask, how'd you get started with on your addiction? They all tell me. This is exactly in the other three, and people don't think that's true. So I'm trying to learn about it, but I'm telling you what I find out when I travel to the addiction centers. They say they started with just recreational marijuana. They said then turns into harder stuff. And I know you're saying it. I know. I'm trying to find out, too, and I'm trying to learn. So she says, what have I learned? Well, I've learned since Thursday that medical marijuana, there's a lot of good assets and attributes that it can help. So if that's the case, we're looking at that. I'm talking to doctors, and we'll be going back to Washington, doing research on this, finding out doctors and how they feel about it. What's the side effects? What can it do? Can it basically, does it addict people? Does it basically, can you get off of it? Or is it the same as basically you're going to need treatment centers later for it too? I don't know, but we're going to find out. So we're trying everything we can. I've said this. What I know about just marijuana, recreational marijuana, I would not be in favor or support legalizing recreational marijuana. That's just me. And I know that, trust me, it's the same in all three other town halls. It's the same. People feel the same about that. So with that, and I know they say, well, Colorado made a lot of money and this and that, and prohibition didn't work. So I've heard for the last 3 days, I've heard a little bit of everything. And we'll take all that in consideration. That's what this is all about. It's for me to understand your concerns and to learn more about it. I can only tell you what I know. And it might not be enough to have the conversation you want, but I'm willing to learn. I'm not acceptable to the recreational marijuana and legalizing marijuana. I'm more receptive to finding out medical marijuana and what role it can play and how it can help people with their care.
That's Senator Joe Manchin from West Virginia, Democrat. And to me, the important part of that clip wasn't that he was citing the gateway theory. It's the reaction he got from his constituents in West Virginia booing him on the idea that there was a gateway theory from marijuana to the opiate problems they're having in West Virginia. The gateway is oxycodone, is Vicodin, is all these pills that have been pushed on the people of West Virginia. That's what's led to the heroin epidemic. Now, in our other clip, we've got Attorney General Jeff Sessions, some of his comments from his appearance at the Richmond, Virginia meeting of law enforcement officials, where he delivered his tough on crime remarks and his adoration for law enforcement. But of course, he also had to speak to the issue of drugs in America, particularly marijuana, which he believes has been far too tolerated by the Obama administration. We should go back to the Reagan era and just say no.
I think we have too much of a tolerance for drug use, psychologically, politically, morally. We need to say, as Nancy Reagan said, just say no. Don't do it. There's no excuse for this. It's not recreational. It can be destructive, and it consistently is destructive. Lives are at stake, and we're not going to worry about being fashionable, in my view, at this point in time. We're going to see, and we're already seeing, the death and destruction that results from the prevalence of drugs in America, and the argument's not going to be that hard to win in the months to come. People will see too many of the people they know losing their lives. I reject the idea that we're going to be better placed if we have more marijuana and you can just go down to the corner grocery store and get it. Give me a break. This is high purity THC content marijuana. And it's not a healthy substance, particularly for young people. I'm astonished to hear people suggest we can solve our heroin crisis. Have you heard this? By having more marijuana. Well, how stupid is that? Give me a break. So we're going to have to stand up and confront that. Tell the truth here. My nation needs to say clearly once again that using drugs is bad. It will destroy your life. In the 80s and 90s, we saw campaigns stressing prevention. I spent a lot of volunteer time with volunteers in my hometown, as I think happened all over. Many of you participated in those, and it did work. We can do this again. Educating people and telling them the terrible truth about drugs and addiction will result in better choices by more people. We can reduce the use of drugs, save lives, and turn back the surge in crime that inevitably follows.
Have you heard this? There's people out there who say that marijuana, more marijuana, could reduce the problems with heroin. I mean, how stupid is that? But people in the states that have medical marijuana, 25% fewer of them, are dying from opiate overdoses.
And in those same states, my goodness, the doctors are prescribing 1,800 fewer pills a month. Why, that's just stupid.
That's our Attorney General, ladies and gentlemen. That's all the time we got for Hour 1. Thanks, podcast listeners, for hanging out with us. For those of you watching live here on YouTube, stay tuned. We're back with some news out of Oregon. Senate wants to raise the cigarette age to 21. We got some more video and audio and a caller from Oklahoma to tell you about. For everyone here at Delta 9 Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth.